present. An increasingly dysfunctional economic system that doesn't provide for the needs of most of the world's people while producing unusable wealth for a few. And an ecological crisis that requires global cooperation to resolve. It's a call-in show and you're invited to participate. That's on Thresholds, Thursdays at 3 p.m. here on KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to tonight's edition of Technology Bites, coming straight from our hearts to you.
Are we sure it's tonight's edition?
Oh no, that's next week's actually. So yeah, this week's is, we could be lying completely this week.
We always tell the truth.
Always.
If it's not coming from our heart, where's it coming from?
I never lie.
Our gut.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Flicted.
It's Freaky Wednesday.
It's confusing.
Wow. Yeah, well, Pete won't be with us tonight, so that's why we had the really clean intro, except for we're flicking to do that. So it's good that we're just keeping it real. Here on Technology Bites.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, we are glad you tuned in. It is not yet done with being cold in Houston, so got some nice cool weather outside. It's damp.
I'm thinking we're going to get another one, at least one other one in March.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I could see that. St. Patrick's weekend, maybe around March 15th, March 17th, somewhere in there. Yeah. Well, this is the kind of weather I wish I was home. Enjoying my brand new furnace.
Wow. Big bucks.
You paid for it, you can't even enjoy it.
I know, really. All that insulation keeping the house toasty warm. My bird's doing great. Cynthia's great. I'm here. And poor. So I like that. All right. I'm rich in friends. Or was until Pete left me. So anyway, we're glad you could tune in. You can visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also hang out with us in IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel Tech Bytes. You can either use your own client, or you can use the client we have available on our website to participate in the IRC. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geekradio. And you can call us up and be on the show with us tonight.
Right now. Call right now.
That's right, because we have no news.
Call right now.
So, yeah, we're going to go straight in. Okay, and here's Peter Hughes without the news. Nope, that's it. We're done. So 713-526-5738. We have a geek gathering not quite around the corner, but coming
closer
up.
Closer than it was last week.
Closer than it was.
Yes.
Yeah. So, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. All the lines are open, and we are going straight to the phones because that's the kind of show we are tonight. And I'm getting logged into the IRC.
Oh, IRC.
Oh?
I was asleep at the wheel.
I do want to let everybody know if you are if you're using a Mac or an iPhone, you should update now. Just do it because there's a serious security flaw out there. All you Windows users can laugh and point. Yeah.
Tonight's your night of smugness. Just enjoy it.
Rare night of smugness against all those Apple, you know, fanboys. So, you know, just point, laugh. But if you are an Apple user, if you're using iOS 6 or iOS 7, or you've got any form of the Apple OS, you need to patch it and patch it now. So we'll wait. It won't take long, I swear, but do it. I've updated all my computers at home and all my iOS devices. It's just a weird statement for me to even make all my iOS devices. All right, 713-526-5738. Looks like we do have a call in the queue, so we are moving right along with our call-in show, which is what this is, a computer call-in show. So it requires you to call in, talk to us about...
computers.
Stuff. Computers, mostly.
Electronics, cell phones, smartphones, gaming systems. Sometimes.
Bread machines.
Bread machines.
My dough won't rise.
Juicers.
My dough won't rise.
You know, I have a bread machine that I've had for 21 years, and it's made a loaf of bread once a week, oh, okay. Every week, for 21 years.
We talking about Cynthia?
No, I'm talking about... well, she operates the technology, but I mean, I have physical, one of those bread machines. You know,
nice.
You put the packet in.
Yeah.
Add water, turn it on.
It's never broken down over 21 years.
Until now. It is finally, like, there's a gasket. There's a little gasket or something that's worn out. So I've got to see if I can find a replacement.
Hello, eBay.
Yeah.
That's
kind of like your trackball thing.
That's where I'm looking for my mouse.
You know, I just...
One just sold for, I missed it, $46.
There is so rare. It is so rare to find any kind of tech or appliance that lasts longer than maybe 5 or 6 years, yeah. You know, but a cheesy old, not even state of the art bread machine from 1990 something. It was doing its job. It was made to do this thing and it did this thing without fail. And now I cannot let it go.
Is it a plastic part or is it a metal
part? It's a little rubber part. Yeah.
A little rubber
part? A little rubber gasket. I'm sure I could find it. I just need to go look for it.
So you got a bread machine and you guys slice the bread yourself or
yeah.
Do you have like some kind of nice slicer? Or?
No, we have one of those, electric knives with the dual blades that kind of,
yeah, you're fully automated all the way.
It's awesome.
So if you want to make a sandwich, you have to cut two pieces of bread. You just,
we usually, dice it into slices as soon as we get, we don't have a slicer, but we'll cut it into, you know, nice thicks and you can make great Texas toast. You can make fat grilled cheese sandwiches.
Oh, grilled cheese.
It's just awesome. It's just, and it smells like, you know, it smells like freshly made bread. It smells like the bakery.
It's nothing like that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like nice thick cut fried bologna sandwiches on like a big Texas toast bread.
Boy, my wife, she did not believe that fried bologna was a thing.
What?
Well, then when she realized it was the thing, she just thought it was the grossest thing.
Oh, it's great.
Here come the foodies.
I explained to her, you know, in my glorious days as a bachelor, you know, the skillet. I had a skillet, and it was mostly used grilling burgers or grilling bologna. And I explained to her how when you put the bologna in the skillet, it turns into the Astrodome.
Yes.
And then you have to flip it over and kind of, you know, warp it the other way.
Yeah. Or some people also slice it on the corners into four slices, so it kind of ends up looking like a
pizza?
Maltese cross, sort of.
Oh, I hadn't seen. That's pretty exotic. Are you a foodie?
So in this one pan you had as a bachelor, there was a circle in the middle, and there was grease all around.
There was a circle in the middle. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know.
I used to have that skillet.
You may have inherited it from Jay.
I gave mine up a long time ago because I just don't cook at all.
That is one seasoned skillet.
You know, it was. Everything that it cooked was delicious.
Washed it.
Well, that's not true. It got washed once every couple of weeks, whether it needed it or not.
When I made ramen.
Oh, you're talking about boiling water. Are you a foodie? No, so every time I say, you know, Cynthia laments how, you know, she's got to go make dinner or whatever. So I'll make dinner. She goes, I don't want fried bologna. Oh, come on. I know how to make hamburgers.
We have fresh bread.
I just had fried bologna, like, on Saturday
really?
Or Sunday. Yeah.
Homemade, or do you have to go out for that?
Well, I didn't make the bologna, but...
Does anybody serve?
I actually fried the bologna myself.
We were, when I was explaining this to Cynthia one morning at breakfast, we're at our favorite restaurant on the west side, and the owner of the restaurant was taking my side. He understood this, and so he got up from the table and went back to the kitchen and came back with a plate of fried bologna sandwiches on really good bread, and it was, and they were great. They were just – it was exotic.
She change her opinion at all?
No, she still hates it. There's no accounting for taste. You know, it's just the way, you know, you can't convey that to a woman of sophistication, how there can be an appeal to the way that the blob of mayonnaise slides along the grease of a slice of fried bologna.
See, I used to, when I had my one skillet, I would cook bacon in it, like three or four pieces of bacon. And then
you must have had a good job.
And then I would fry an egg in it over hard, and then I would put the bread in it and toast it in the grease. And then I would put some grape or strawberry jelly and then put all that together into a sandwich.
Yes.
Instead of a breakfast sandwich.
I'll have one, please.
We could just get the Sterno cans and make that up before the show.
Man.
We're right on track with that.
That's good.
All right, 713-526-5738. We got one call in the queue.
Call in with your one skillet meal.
Tell us about home skillet. Tell us about your home skillet. All right, Greenhouse, who do we have up first?
All right, up first on the show, we are going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, I have a one skillet question.
Okay.
And I'm an old fart, so be kind.
I'll do my best.
All right, I have a 6 or 7 year old desktop Dell. It's XPS 410, and it's been working fine. And the last week or two, I have not been able to get into internet, and I get the full screen notice that internet cannot access this website. I can't even get into my email, but it's intermittent. You know, sometimes for a while I couldn't even get into Google, my homepage, to bring up Yahoo for my email or to bring up any other sites. So I don't know, then it comes back, and then I hit a website that says internet cannot access this web page. Now, I did the diagnostic, and it said that there was an issue with between the connection from my my modem to the line, and however, when I click on connect, you know, AT&T, and it comes right up. So, and I check my lines, and it seems to be fine.
Well, what kind of internet connection do you have? Are you using dial-up?
Oh, wait. Now, I'm getting to the point. I'm on dial-up. I live out here in the country,
mm-hmm.
and we've had issues before. Our servers are way out there in Hempstead. So The point is, now the modem is built into my computer. We don't have modems anymore. But is this a, my question is how do I determine if this is an issue inside my computer? From the line appears to be working fine.
Well, let me stop you for a second and ask a couple of questions that will help me diagnose this.
Okay.
So you sit down at the computer. You double-click on the icon that's going to connect you to the Internet. It dials the modem. It does the handshake. It makes all that noise. And you get connected.
Well, I don't get the noise, but yeah.
Really? Have you got it muted or something or turned down?
Well, wait. What? No. Well, whatever. I start with dial-up, all right? And I click on dial-up, and then it connects. AT&T is now, you're now connected.
Okay, so it tells you that you've established a modem connection and that you're supposedly online.
Exactly right. And then when I go to my usual sites, Google, or I'm trying to get to my, I can't even get my email up, I get the screen that says Internet connected.
Right. So what's happening is that you're making the connection to the Internet provider over dial-up, and I haven't had to troubleshoot dial-up in a long time, but it's, you know, it's not that hard. So your computer makes the connection, but then when you launch a program like Internet Explorer or your email program, anything that's designed to reach out over your Internet connection and go to the site and retrieve data and bring it back to your computer, that's failing.
Now, correct.
There are a number of things that can cause that. If your modem is successfully making the connection and you're not showing that you're getting disconnected, then your modem's probably fine.
Thank you.
But what could be happening is that there could be software issues on the computer itself that's causing the Internet.
Is that true for like 7, 8-year-old computers?
I have to say that a 7 or 8-year-old computer is probably, even if it wasn't abused or treated poorly, can have significant issues. It just develop over time as you're browsing the web and surfing the Internet. If you've been infected with a virus, if you've managed to pick up any spyware.
Well, I did the super anti-spyware doctor thing, and I had 5 cookies, and I wiped them out.
Cookies are generally not a problem. You're looking.
Exactly. I have no indication of a virus. How do I know that my computer's crapping out before I go spend $100-some-odd and get it fixed? Or if it's a server issue, because, you know, we're out here in the woods. You know,
do you have access?
I don't know.
Do you have access to another computer with a modem in it?
I do not. I only have one. Do modems go out? Is there a connection between the Ethernet connection and the modem inside the computer that can fail? How would my connection come up so fast, but I can no longer get on the Internet? I mean, it just keeps giving me this.
Well, let me ask you a couple of more questions. You're using Internet Explorer, right?
Yes, sir.
Are you using a mail program to get to your mail, or do you get to your mail from a website?
Well, I don't know. I go to Google and I go to Yahoo.
Okay, so you have Yahoo. You're viewing your email in a web browser, right? You're not using like Outlook or Windows Live Mail or anything like that to check your mail.
Oh, it's just plain old Yahoo.
Okay, so it's all web-based. It's everything. All the problems you're having are with your web access, whether
correct.
It's mail or web pages or whatever.
Correct.
Is it all the time?
Well, it's been intermittent, but sometimes I can't even get on Google, which is my homepage.
Well, what I would
Google comes up, and I get the list of choices, and then I get I cannot access the Internet.
I understand what's happening, but the reason I'm asking the questions that I'm asking is because if you tell me that you can at least get on the web some of the time, then you have the opportunity, hopefully, to maybe go out and download another browser, such as Google Chrome or Mozilla Firefox.
Well, that's one of my questions. I keep getting a pop-up saying that you can access the Internet faster if you go to Google Chrome or you go
It's to... true. It's true. But the reason I'm suggesting this as an option is We don't know. See, I don't know. I can guess and I can speculate as to what's going on, but I don't know what's happening. So you, as the computer owner, have to go through some steps to be able to troubleshoot this issue. So there's some things you can do. One of them would be to download Google Chrome and install it. That'll give you a different browser. And it might be possible that the issue that you're having is with Internet Explorer, and that issue may not manifest in Chrome. That would at least tell us that the issue is more than likely software rather than hardware.
But if I have an old computer that has, I think I have Windows, like
XP, I'm sure.
I mean, it's no issue to download and upgrade with my old system. I mean,
I don't think so. If you're running Windows XP, you're completely eligible to run a program, install a program such as Chrome or Firefox.
Are they doing this on purpose so that we have to upgrade?
They're not. I mean, if we determine that the issue is software, you have an available free option to you that will fix the problem, which is to reload your system software. You can restore that computer to the way it was when it was brand new.
All right. So if
it's software, if it's hardware, if it is your modem, we don't know yet.
Well, it couldn't be because I wouldn't be able to connect in the first place.
That's not necessarily true. It could be the modem and it's intermittent. And also it could be your phone lines. You could have enough static or noise on the phone line that's causing you from negotiating a good, strong connection with the internet service provider, which could be interfering with your ability to use that connection effectively to get to the web.
I can't believe you said that, because we've had some weird buzzing on our phone.
If you've got any kind of static or noise on the phone line, that will interfere with your ability to send and receive data over an internet connection using that phone line.
Ah, okay. Well, that was one of my theories. And
if you've got noise on the line, I would call your telco and get them to fix that.
Okay. Well, we're out here in the country, and, you know, we have all kinds of issues with dial-up, you know.
I know.
I called you guys a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted to transfer to a mobile a computer, you know, a pad or something, but you told me I had to buy a hard drive, external hard drive, and Wi-Fi and all that, and I said, screw that.
Well, you aren't going to be able to use a pad on your dial-up.
I want to get away from dial-up, but we don't have cable out here. Our only choice is
and satellite. Satellite.
Well, hey, I don't want a damn satellite dish in my house. But anyway, yeah, my buddy up in New York has been bitching me out for years because I haven't had the sense to get a smartphone. But
just need to sell that country house and move to the big city.
I moved here from the big city, by God.
Well, you got away from everything, including the internet.
All right, so it may not be my computer.
It may not be your computer. Okay. It may be the phone line. It may be the phone line. It may be the modem. It's hard to say.
So I should call AT&T and have them check it out.
I would do that, yes.
All right, well, thank you so much. You've been helpful. I feel better.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Goodbye. Right.
Dial-up. Man, you know, after having owned a computer for 7 or 8 years, you hope to figure out something about using it. I mean, a 7 or 8 year old computer, you're looking at probably a refresh on the software would be a good thing. If you're not in the position to buy a new computer, you know, at least refresh the software, but maybe buy a new computer. You know, all that money you're saving living out in the country.
When was the last time you had dial up?
I don't want to think about how old I am.
I think dial up was, I had dial-up when I bought the bread machine, but I was...
Yeah, that's probably fortunate. Probably a lot of people didn't even have dial-up then. They didn't even have computers.
Well, I got the bread machine when I was working at Best Buy, and I went to Best Buy selling computers, and when I went to work at Best Buy, that's when the internet started, you know, at least for the consumer.
The popular internet.
The popular,
so it must have been,
not the...
I would say, by internet, do you mean the web? The World Wide Web?
Yes, the web.
Okay, because that was...
I didn't know it as the web
because... That was 95.
I was accessing everything as... Well, it was actually 94.
Yeah, I mean...
I had a shell account. I was having to figure out how to... I was using Slip...
So the web existed in 94, but in popular culture, it wasn't until 95.
Well, I was using... I was using Mozilla to access web pages... over dial-up on a Windows 3.1 computer.
Yeah, because I remember in 93, I remember somebody taking me to some SGI, Silicon Graphics workstations, and being like, hey, look at this. These are called web pages. This is awesome. And it was mostly like instructors in like engineering classes, like what labs the students needed to do, like their curriculum, and then like a picture of the person and some text about them and their pets or whatever. And I was like, yeah, that's really great.
When I got a web browser to work, when I actually was able to get a fake Slip PPP connection over my shell account and I launched my browser, I had no idea where to go.
Yep.
I mean, it's like, okay, how do I get anywhere?
I had to go buy a book full of listings of places to go. There wasn't really any searches out there. I mean, it was really lame. You had to go get the yellow pages. You know, there was an internet.
I had the internet yellow pages, and I had a book. I had a tear out from one book that had Unix commands on it, so that I could learn how to do ls and all in the rm-rf and all of that stuff.
I continued to use a terminal to do everything.
I kept my shell account as long as it
was. 96 or 97, maybe, at least. I was still using, actually, probably, 96, 97. I was still using computers with just terminal. Basically. I was just using TTY terminals, VT emulators, and doing everything in text.
I was doing a lot of stuff in VI at one point.
VI? Or Emacs?
Not Emacs, VI.
I'll use whatever. Sometimes you don't have time to download 30 megs.
It wasn't like I made
a
choice. It was not from well, VI is superior.
I think VI is harder to use.
You know, again, it was a situation where I need to do this thing. I've looked through all the list of commands that I have on the shell account. Oh, VI is an editor. Okay.
And any Unix box you get on will have VI on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can't say that about Emacs.
Well, it wasn't like I made a choice. It wasn't like, okay, let me evaluate Emacs and VI for my editing needs. It's like, oh, type VI. Here comes an editor. Okay, this is confusing. I don't know exactly what to do.
What do I do now? That's the most important thing. You remember?
Colon Q bang to quit.
Without writing. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Colon Q bang and Control X, Control C.
Emacs.
One gets you out of VI and one gets you out of Emacs.
I remember colon W bang to write the file and colon X bang to quit, right? Or Q bang.
Yeah, bang means you mean it.
Yeah, bang
don't
means
ask me.
Don't
talk back.
Quit. Like if you accidentally made some edits and you were like, ooh, I did not mean to do that,
colon
Q bang.
Because
if you just do colon Q, it'll say, do you want to write?
Yeah. Q bang was where it wouldn't prompt you for anything.
Right.
If you just Q colon Q, it would say, do you want to quit without saving? Yes. But so I was doing that, and now I'm trying to remember the name of the PPP emulator. Because I had to figure out how to use the – first of all, it was cool in those days because I was on a shell account, and you could do a W and see what everybody was doing. So you would do W, and it would show you all the users logged into the shell.
Do you use TraceRT?
He would finger people, though,
I fingered
bet.
People.
Oh, I definitely did that.
No, but what was cool...
Across systems.
What was cool on... really cool is when you could finger, like, I wonder if somebody has an account on that other service provider.
I would
provider.
Randomly pick IPs and finger to see if
finger
I could see
at,
who
so
was
get,
logged
like,
in.
Get a whole list?
Yeah, well, everybody was logged in. And if somebody had an interesting username or had some, like, you know, interesting tag out next to the name, I would email them.
Well, the whole idea of locking down systems and security is what I remember when it went from you could finger on any system and get a list of users on that system to where you could finger a system, but you had to have a username. Otherwise, it wouldn't come back with anything.
Right.
And then finger went away.
Yeah.
So the levels of security is like, that's how that worked. And when I had the shell account on Starbase at Neosoft, a lot of the user, all the user directories were wide open. So not only could you do a W and see who all was on and what they were doing, you do a W for who it, on the server, show you the username and show you whatever they were running.
And sometimes you could write into their directories.
And you could, you could go into their directories. Like I saw all these people using TIA. That was the emulator, TIA. So I'd have to go into their folder and find their TIA.
You would run it out of, you would run the executable out of their directory?
No, I wouldn't. Copy it? I didn't think to do that because that would have been a ./, whatever to run it. And I don't know that I had execute privileges on their stuff, but I found the TIA document, the README. That said, okay, and it told you about. So then I had to use FTP or was Gopher? Was it a fetch command? Was it Gopher? Was it
Gopher? You could fetch.
Yeah,
with
you
Gopher.
Could get stuff.
Yeah,
with
I either
Gopher.
Used Gopher or FTP from the shell line to go to the TIA site and download the code, and then you follow the instructions. It tells you you have to compile it for whatever the operating system is that you're using, and I had no idea. So I had to go out and research how to figure out what operating system the terminal I was on. And then it was FreeBSD. It's like, oh, okay, so I'm going to compile this for FreeBSD. And then I did my first make. And I remember compiled it. And then you run it to ./TIA. And then all this code would go running across. And that's when you had to activate your TCP/IP program to capture that and emulate a PBP connection. And that was fun. But they then I got Mozilla to come up, and I didn't know where to go.
The
how do you even know what to do?
The service that I was using was actually a friend's account, and he had a shell account because shell accounts were either $5 or $10 a month. You could get a slip PPP account, but they cost $20 or $30
That's the same
a month.
Deal was there, yeah.
And 20. So, but the thing is, they had no way to keep people from using slip PPP if you had a shell account. So at some point, everything started going graphical, and so all these people that had Unix accounts for $5 or $10 a month started using slip PPP on them, and so they ended up, and then they didn't want to give people shell access to the systems anymore. That was considered, you know, like a greater level of access. So the prices flipped.
Right.
So it went, my friend was grandfathered in, but it flipped so that a slip PPP account was $15 or $20 a month. And a shell account was like $60 or $80 a month because they really didn't want to give them out.
Well, I also remember when I actually went to work for Neosoft and we were, we were still selling shell accounts for less than slip accounts. And a lot of people were using shell accounts to, and when you run an emulator like TIA, it offloads all the processing onto the server that you're connected to. So any rendering of web pages or downloading of Usenet or whatever was all done on the server. So it was really a violation of the terms of service. So that's when I learned how to identify processes and use kill commands, because then I would just kill people's TIA process and down they'd go.
You are banned.
Well, didn't quite ban them, but they quickly fire it back up. But it was fun interrupting their service. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We are accepting your calls. We have all of our phone lines are open, and we are only a half hour into our two-hour program, so we've got plenty of time. So if you have something on your mind and you have or a question you want to ask, you can call in 713-526-5738. Today is the 20th anniversary of the passing of Houston legend Bill Hicks.
Say, you actually, I knew that you knew of him, and I knew that you occupied space near him. I didn't really realize that you knew him, though.
I knew him, yeah.
So that's radically different.
Yeah, he was a young, up-and-coming comic when I met him. I mean, we weren't buddies or anything.
So do you guys just meet just by being in the same general vicinity or the same rounds? Or?
Well, in those days, I lived – where did I live? I might have lived in outskirts of town. But we would go to the Comics Annex and the Comedy Workshop, and they had free passes on Thursday to come in and watch the comics do experiment with new routines. And that's when I saw Bill Hicks for the first time. And so I would go there on Thursday nights, every Thursday night, and pray that Bill was going to be there. And he was there, most of the time.
Was he always as intense as he is on, like, the handful of YouTube videos and things that I've seen?
Oh, that intensity grew over time. If you go back and look at some of the old videos from his early stuff, I mean, It was edgy. It was certainly, and it was funny as it could possibly be. It was just so funny. And, but then I remember when he started to take off and, when he was supposed to be on Letterman and then they bumped him and then he was supposed to be on Letterman and they banned it. They cut it, all that anticipation of great things. But then the whole thing where he came out in the routine where he did the black hat and did that kind of heavy metal rock and roll comedy. That was when he was in his, I didn't get to see any of that live, but that was when it was most intense. But I saw him open up at Rockefeller's for Warren Zevon. That was a great twofer.
Wow.
All right, 713, what?
I think today is also Johnny Cash's birthday.
It is the Man in Black's birthday today. So we are celebrating him.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
I fell into a technology bites. 713-526-5738.
A token ring of fire.
Yay, good one. All right, 713-526-5738. Groovehouse?
Yes.
I see we have someone in the queue.
We do, and we have room for more.
We do have room for more, so dial up 713-526-KPFT. Who do we have up?
Up next, we are going to speak with Tom.
Tom, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, gentlemen. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I wanted to see what you're hearing these days about the whole issue with net neutrality and wanting to charge Netflix and those type of operators more because of the amount of bandwidth they're consuming.
Well, Netflix just not. I wish Pete was on here. I know he follows it, and Dwight would too. But I know that Netflix caved about 4 or 5 days ago to Comcast and Verizon. More or less, they were having disputes. I know this because we were looking at going with Cogent, who's one of the fiber carriers. And the way that the internet works is there are backbones where different, like, large pipelines, usually fiber, will meet up. And so, you know, this provider will offload packets to another provider. And there's been a lot of dispute over the connections where Netflix connects in. And they go through Cogent's one of the big providers. So Verizon and Comcast, mainly Comcast, has been wanting to charge Netflix a whole bunch of money and have them pay because so many home users that Comcast and Verizon are also getting money from want to stream Netflix and things like that. So they were fighting it out for a long time. They were not upgrading the lines that supported Netflix for a while. So it's kind of, you know, while they weren't degrading service, they definitely weren't doing anything to bolster it. And then I think because of the merger, Netflix said, hey, I guess we're not going to be able to win this, and they went ahead and inked a deal. I don't know if the amount was disclosed, but they're going to be giving Verizon and Comcast quite a bit of money to be able to carry streaming movie packets. So it's probably not a good thing in the long haul because it definitely sets a preference to where, you know, providers can hold content hostage from home users.
And also, it stifles any innovation from someone coming along who might have another means of streaming, but now they'll have to pay ransom money in order to be able to use the pipe.
Yeah, the danger where this gets is that I guess, you know, the cable companies for a long time, they always had, you know, they had market differentiators, and then they're saying, okay, cable's dying. A lot of people are cutting the cords. They're kind of finding this cord-cutting thing. And I think where they're seeing, you know, a way to get money is to differentiate themselves, and they want it to come down to where, like, okay, if you choose Comcast and Verizon, hey, you get this streaming service, you get this phone service, you get these things. And if you choose someone else, you don't get those things. We're going to cut you off from those things. So I don't like that model. When I buy the internet, I want the internet.
Yeah, it's
all
funny
of it.
Because it feels like, in a way, over the last few years, the position of what net neutrality means has been completely flipped around by the people who opposed it. So originally everybody who was for net neutrality, now it like has been flipped around so that it's politically something else. And so I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people who originally were for net neutrality are now confused and or against it.
It was confusing to begin with, and I think that, like Flick had said, they just wanted to muddy the waters to even make it more of a confusing issue to where people wouldn't really know how to feel about it, you know?
Well, the idea is that you should be able to pay for a certain amount of bandwidth, and whatever internet you can reach from that connection comes to your computer.
And that your provider is not stifling or blocking or controlling that access to that. Basically it's a dumb pipe that just goes out into the world.
Yeah, packet is a packet. Doesn't matter where it's from or where it's going.
But
they're all treated the same.
Unfortunately, as soon as the large backbone providers and the local providers get into that conversation, then suddenly it gets weird because there's all this stuff happening at the upper levels that people that are just down at their houses consuming don't know that goes on, where they're negotiating, you know, where the demarks are and how much bandwidth is going to be consumed. And when you go beyond that, you have to pay more, and they're buying and selling bandwidth from each other and third parties. And there's, well, just also, there's all this stuff in the background that it makes it much more complex.
It doesn't help that, like companies like Comcast and AT&T are also content providers.
Yeah. And that definitely provides a conflict of interest equation.
If they're looking at whether or not they're going to allow their bandwidth to be used to download Netflix as opposed to people only having the choice of buying their movies.
Or, you know, with AT&T, you can watch unlimited movies, but with Netflix, you get 5 gig and then you have to pay more.
Yeah, that's how they're doing it. That's how I think I drive people. Maybe what we need is some not necessarily draconian in this case, but like how we've got Texas Lost, where you can't, like, you know, make beer and distribute beer and do whatever. Maybe
a tiered system.
Maybe the content providers can't be in charge of distributing the content. You know, maybe we need to cut it up like that as far as the regulation goes. That sounds pretty extreme.
You can end up with a bunch of bells again.
Yeah, but I don't want to have to subscribe to two different internet providers to get the full internet, which is kind of how it feels.
Unfortunately,
like it's
maybe also I can't think of a hydra or whatever, you know, like you cut the head and two more grow back.
Oh yeah, yeah. So what's your take on it, Tom? Like, how are you feeling about the whole thing?
Well, I don't see how we can avoid having the higher bandwidth people pay something just to support continued maintenance alone of the existing pipeline.
Yeah, and I guess that's the flip side of what Verizon's saying, is they're saying, like, hey, you know, some people use a disproportionately large amount of the internet, amount of the resources, and other people just check email and log on once in a while. So,
But the thing is, on some level, there's also always, you know, a lifetime for hardware. And so hardware requirements and speed and functionality is always improving. So sometimes it also feels like some of the providers kind of want to keep using the old hardware as long as possible, keep charging people rates based on the capabilities of old hardware, you know, and then say, we want you to pay for all this new hardware once we have to replace this old hardware that's failing. We want you to pay completely for the new hardware, and then we're not going to give you more bandwidth.
Yeah, no more bandwidth. That's the thing that's upsetting. Is, you know, we had DS, you know, we had to go back. You know, we had a dial-up call tonight, so we had dial-up, and the dial-up speeds, they would double. Like, every time I bought a new modem, I would get at least double the speed, if not more, than the last time I bought a modem. And then DSL came out, and, you know, that was awesome. And then things have just stalled out. Like, we should have fiber everywhere, and it's taking, you know, like the threat of Google Fiber coming to cities for these other providers to say, uh-oh, maybe we'd better do something else. I mean, there's, I guess, a small smattering of Verizon Fiber, their Fios product, but that's all there is.
Well, that hardware is all expensive. I mean,
It definitely is all expensive. That's true.
Well, also, I think it's important to keep in mind that this technology is rapidly changing and constantly changing. So we're talking about dial-up internet, ISDN internet, and so forth. The amount of bandwidth that they're able to deliver to your house, to your smartphone, it's getting faster, and it should be getting cheaper for the consumer. So, and there should also, I mean, especially with more with wireless broadband, like through cell providers like Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, and your other carriers like that, if they can break through the limitations on how much, because you have to pay if you go over a certain amount of data consumption using your broadband mobile stuff, you have to pay for that. But that,
okay, guys. Great conversation. I appreciate your show.
All right. I think you got more than he bargained for.
Wow. Wrap it up.
I'm done.
I got all I needed out of you guys. Shut up.
Ask scary questions, you know.
Yeah, get scary answers. Woo.
No more internet for him.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, for me, that is an argument that people use, that the hardware is very expensive. And, I mean, that is true, but, you know, this group of people chose to be in a business, and there's certain requirements to be in that business, you know?
Which one did she talk about? Like the internet business?
Internet business.
Oh.
I mean, just, you know, buying routers and switches and fiber runs and, you know, laying fiber and all that stuff. I mean, yeah, that stuff's not cheap. But at the same time, you know, if you want to be a car dealership get in that business, you're going to have to outlay money to get cars. You know,
we're not selling anything later than a 1978 Pontiac.
You could go and try to go in really cheap and get really old, beat up, used cars and go on the low end, or you could, you know, open up a Lamborghini dealership or, you know, something like that and have to spend a whole lot of money for every product. But even if you went on the cheap end, there's a cost of entry to be in the business, and that's just the way it is. You have to have what it takes to be in the business. If it's not a viable business model, then it shouldn't be propped up by fake things. It should change.
Yeah.
Fight the power.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us, and if you have the ability to stand toe-to-toe and actually get the answer to the question you asked. And ride the call all the way through or something. 713-526-KPFT to be on the air with Technology Bites. It's cold outside. It's wet and damp. You're inside. You're warm. You're comfortable. What are we competing with on television? Anything? Can't think
of
it.
Who watches TV?
The Olympics is over.
I haven't had TV in years.
Man, I've become a fan of True Detective on HBO. That is a great show.
Yeah, that's big money cable stuff.
Should be giving me that for free.
Yeah, really.
713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, all of our lines are open. Groove House has nothing else to do except screen your call and get you ready to be on the air as we approach the top of the first hour here on Technology Bites. 713-526-KPFT. Call in. We will take all callers. We will answer your questions. Do what we need to do.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just that I'm getting older or if I'm a cheapskate or both, but prices seem like, you know, they're just stuff's too expensive.
Prices keep going up.
Yeah.
They want money for stuff.
I mean, you know, like, I think it'd be cool to have a copy of that movie, but it doesn't seem like it's worth what everybody, they want you to pay for it.
I can't imagine paying $30 or even $20 to own a movie.
I mean, I remember when VHS tapes came out, like, originally movies cost $60 or $80 on VHS.
And that was like 80s money, which would be close to probably a couple $100 today, you know?
Let's not even talk about laser discs.
Yeah, so, I mean, I know it's cheaper than that now, but it seems like, especially, you know, the whole theory was, well, once you get rid of the physical product, this stuff is super cheap. But yeah, that didn't happen. I mean, yeah, maybe a CD's worth of material went from $12, which they artificially inflated for years and never dropped like they told everybody it was going to, or dropped a little bit, a few dollars, but never like they said it was going to. They just kind of rolled that over into virtual, so they don't even have to create any physical product, and the price stayed pretty much the same. I mean, it dropped a little bit again, but... So, you know, it's just like, I look at it and I'm like... I understand, you know, you got to pay producers and you got to pay the musicians and you got to pay the, you know, that kind of stuff. If it's a big company that's doing advertising, you know, you got to cover some advertising costs, but it still just seems like a high price.
It is a high price. I can't even, but you know, it's all expensive. I mean, look how much money they put into those darn movies. I mean, you know, millions and millions of dollars just to produce the film. So, I don't know. There's nothing good coming out here.
Although, you know, I heard the Lego movie's really good.
It looks awesome.
Mark Mothersbaugh did the music. I heard it's really good. Yeah.
I saw Ender's Game recorded. I thought it was going to be good. I wish I hadn't seen it.
You should have trusted that.
I really wish I hadn't seen it. Like, it actually did more damage than just, you know, not seeing it at all.
The guy that, I think we talked about this before, the guy that was on the IT Crowd or whatever, he's directed a couple movies. He's got a movie coming out that's based on a story by Dostoevsky, and it looks really interesting. Like, it's a mix of Wes Anderson and Terry Gilliam. Like, I think it's called The Double. It's kind of about this guy who works in this office, and this guy who looks just like him ends up working there and kind of takes over his life and goes after the girl that he's been attracted to forever but never made a move on. And
It's a different movie. There's a movie called The Double that's got Richard Gere and Topher Grace. Probably not the same movie.
There's a new show.
Oh, there is a new Double, though.
There's a new show coming to HBO. It's a Mike Judge production called Silicon Valley.
Ooh, okay.
It's Office Space 2.0. It looks
that
like
could
it's
be really interesting.
Yeah, the previews look pretty good for it. And high nerd capacity there, but unfortunately.
We've also got the Grand Hotel Budapest coming out, as far as Houston directors go. That's always kind of geeky, quirky, nerd fare. I'm excited about that. Hopefully that can't go wrong.
I'm waiting to see if they're going. I mean, Gravity is coming. They're going to bring that back to the theaters. I have never seen it.
That's been on Amazon and not Netflix, but it's been, you could like, it was weird. Like it was in the theaters and then almost immediately you could stream it on a lot of the streaming services. And the other thing I've noticed, which is kind of odd. Yeah. Yeah. On Amazon for like, it was expensive. You couldn't buy it, but you could like lease it or rent it for like $14.
Oh yeah. 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 Well, Comcast has been doing this thing where they'll sell you before you can buy it on DVD. So like you can go on Comcast and buy Gravity for $19-$20, but it's not even the 3D version.
Mm.
So yeah, I could believe that you could pre-order online for $20 or wait and pay $6 to rent it. So I'm waiting to see if Gravity is going to be rentable in 3D and see what that looks like on my TV. But I think it comes out on DVD today or tomorrow.
Is there streamable 3D content? Not knowing because I don't have a 3D
yes.
set.
Well, not streaming.
Well, I mean, for instance, like does Hulu or does Amazon or Netflix,
no,
do they offer
no,
any 3D
streaming? No, not yet. Netflix
streaming?
Is supposed to be doing it soon, but not yet.
But there's some TV channels, cable channels, right, that are
there
that
are
3D content.
You can do on demand on Comcast, and they have a 3D collection, and that's good. But there's not a lot, but there is some. All right, 713-526-5738. We're getting towards the top of the hour here. We've still got time to take a call or so, and certainly have time to get you in the queue for the next hour of the program. If you want to be on the air with us here on Technology Bites, 713-526-KPFT, 713-526-5738. All the lines are open.
I'm not sure that this is quite our target demographic, but my mother just texted me and said that we're competing with Duck Dynasty at 9.
I thought you were on Duck Dynasty.
I just
thought
get
word.
I just get really quiet for about an hour around 9 o'clock.
Pour one out for your homies.
Yeah, I've had at least 6 or 8 people
a day.
Different people tell me. Oh, in fact, one person who was like, didn't even know what that was. They were like, I went into Walmart and there was this stuff and it had your picture all over it.
All right. So, you know, since we're on, okay, there's a call coming in. You know that New Yorkers are paying for over $8,000 for beard implants, transplants? That's apparently.
To go from their beard to the head? Or to go elsewhere
to their beard?
No.
Yes. Because it's such, you know, people, youngsters who do not have what it takes to grow full facial hair are getting patches.
It's a stole patch. A little different.
Stubble Challenge guys are forking up to $8,500 for the beard-boosting procedure, which has spiked in popularity in recent months, plastic surgeons told The Post.
No need. I don't think.
You know, it's the one thing I can do is I can grow hair on my face. And now there's a medical procedure that lets these young hairless punks do the same thing. That's just... And they got hair, too. It's like, I hate them. All right, Groovehouse, I see you got a call ready to go for the queue, so
yes,
let's
do
it.
Who All right, it? Up next, we're going to speak with Robert.
Robert, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, just a couple of different topics. I have y'all heard about this Bitcoin exchange collapsing and going offline and...
Mt. Gox is dead.
Yep.
Long live Mt. Gox. Yeah, the Japanese, it's one of the biggest, I guess, longest lived exchanges that was out there. And they had a huge theft. They didn't know about it for a handful of years. And they
Although evidently, according to a lot of forum posts I was reading, also one of the most poorly run exchanges.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Do you think maybe it got hacked into and somebody stole a bunch of their Bitcoin money?
Yeah, there was definitely a theft. I heard it was somewhere like around the tune of 745,000 Bitcoins that they did not realize was a theft at the time. But that was also back when they were worth a lot less. So they were trying to contact investors and cover those losses. And that was a lot of things led to the downfall.
But then a few days ago, they went and deleted all of their tweets from their Twitter account. And so that really put everybody in a, like, what are they doing? Like, why are they deleting all of their tweets? Like, even if you're going to claim insolvency, like, why would you go and delete? I mean, if you're doing anything except that, like, unless you're trying to hide something, which you can't hide it because it's on the internet already and captured in cached places, but why would you go and delete all of your tweets?
But there was a leaked document, too. Their crisis strategy draft got leaked, and people saw that, and everyone was freaking out. That's out there. Out by the CEO. I think it's Mark Capellas was the CEO's name.
Yeah, and then I read in the last month's Rolling Stone magazine, and it sure has changed. It's now a glossy magazine. It used to be the kind of like a green sheet,
and
you know.
Tiny.
It has Rolling Stone?
Yeah,
it has Justin Bieber on the front this month. I don't know how I feel about that.
No, I tear the cover.
I got a free subscription somehow, and I've got a mail slot. It's like every month, this, you know, like Miley Ray Cyrus is staring me down one month. This month,
yeah,
it's
Justin
Bieber shirtless is staring me down. I don't need that. I really
right
don't.
Off the magazine, you know. But there was this gangster who, you know, got rich quick by having an internet site that's on, I think, what's called the dark internet.
Darknet.
Darknet.
And he was using Bitcoin, you know, as his, cash trading option, I guess, for lack of a better word. But that was an interesting article.
About a rapper?
No, a gangster.
Not talking about Silk Road.
Yeah, you're not talking about Silk Road, are you?
Yeah.
Silk Road.
That guy wasn't really a gangster, I don't think. He was just a
young
guy from Austin that had moved to California that knew how to make money.
And yeah, they tracked him down and caught him and stuff like that.
He made some stupid mistakes to get caught.
Yeah. Well, that was a good article. I don't know if any of y'all read that.
If you're dealing in cryptocurrency, you should be a little bit more capable of hiding yourself.
He was like, he ordered some hits on some people.
I didn't read about that.
That was one of the claims, is that he had ordered hits on people that were going to claiming that they were going to blackmail him.
Hmm. Yeah, that was one. They took him for a ride on one of the hit requests, and then the other hit request was to like the NSA or the FBI or something like that. And so, you know, he wasn't exactly dealing very smartly with that. Anyway, I just thought those topics might be good, you know, Darknet and all that kind of stuff.
All right, well, appreciate that. We're going to take a break for our first hour break here, but maybe we'll resume the conversation with that. Thanks for your call tonight.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
You know, I did not realize that you can now go to GoatCCX without fear.
Really?
Yeah, apparently the...
How did you determine this?
There was an article somewhere. I read.
Someone had to do it first. I don't believe it.
Penguino posted on her Facebook that's like, you need to go see here. No, seriously, trust me. And like,
Don't do it.
And it was, you know, much fear.
What about Lemon Party?
Much scared. No, but wait. No, not Tub Girl either. All right, so, but Goatsy, I did not know that the Christmas Islands, where the domain was registered...
Yeah, CX.
Put an injunction. They cannot show that image. They find that to be a violation of their terms of service.
Wow.
And anyway, we've got to take a short break here. We'll be back after some messages. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Roof House.
Did you know know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit Facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit Twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit Twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at Facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
There are places you go to get the quick news. You know the kind. Those three-line summaries of world issues and events.
The celebrity gossip.
The intellectual junk food.
And then there's public radio.
You tune to KPFT each day because you need more than the summary.
You need to hear the whole discussion to make informed decisions.
You need to understand the background, to understand the cultures, ideas, and history that touch our lives.
You want music from more than five corporations. You need a choice.
And that's why you tune to community radio, because you have to know more. People like you support KPFT to keep us on the air.
So visit kpft.org today to become a member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. Sadly, we're one Ghostbuster short today, as Eon Spengler, rather actor, director, comedian Harold Ramis, left us earlier this week. In addition to Ghostbusters, Ramis also gave us Meatballs, which he co-wrote with Bill Murray, Caddyshack, co-written with Bill's brother Brian, and the movie Groundhog Day. Collectors of mold, spores, and fungus everywhere will miss him. All right. Sadly, we're one Ghostbuster short today, as Eon Spengler, or rather actor, director, comedian Harold Ramis, left us earlier this week. We could go on, but we're not going to do it. So on a slightly brighter and slightly less repetitive note, Nerd Night Houston is happening this Friday night at Not So in Downtown. Not So
is Nerd Bold. Night already happened.
No, I don't believe so.
I went to it.
Somebody... Really? It's not coming up on the 28th?
Well, it may be every month. I don't
it's,
know.
Oh, it's every month. It's every month. Yeah, this is the second installment.
I was going to say, I went and I didn't see anybody I knew, and I sit around for a while and I listened to one and a half of the speech. No, one's the first speaker, and I didn't see anybody I know, and my phone had died, and so I left.
Oh yeah, that was the inaugural night, so hopefully it'll pick up as things go forward. But we'll see. Yeah, this one actually takes place at 314 Main Street in the heart of downtown, and it's the second installment of the national night, and this one focuses on love. So doors open at 7:30. The talk starts at 8. Dr. Nerdlove, a.k.a. Harris O'Malley, will be talking about simplified dating. I'm assuming he's talking about how to get the digits, not how to get the digits, rather, how to divide the top and the bottom by the highest number that can divide into both numbers exactly. Simplifying. Anna Jarman will then take the reins with Behind the Scenes, How Online Dating Algorithms Have Redefined Romance. That's where users ignore the matches and the effort put into writing dating profiles and make decisions based purely on the pictures, regardless of the algorithm employed. And lastly, Chase Hughes will deliver the talk. Blink if you want me, Nonverbal Signs of Arousal and Attraction. Ah, some of you just blinked. So we're going to take a few moments here to let everyone else blink, catch up, take your time. Got some time. Anyway, while we're waiting for the stragglers, you can head over to Nerd Night Houston's Twitter account to see what else is in store for the coming year. Oh, and the most important part of the talks, they serve beer. So, Flicted's first I don't know. Fun or no fun?
I'm impressed that you know when it is, because the site does not talk about what the date
is. No, you really have to go to their Twitter account. They make it hard to kind of see what's going on with them, and I'm thinking maybe that's why the attendance isn't all that awesome. It's pretty big in other cities, but you need to go to... There's a Nerd Night Twitter account.
I'm thinking...
You need to find Nerd Night Houston Twitter
like
account.
Like, how many people were there for it specifically? And it wasn't a bad crowd. The thing is, Tussauds is long... And they were showing it against the sidewall. And so everybody was spread like long ways to look at a projector that, you know, so people on the ends
can't really see.
Couldn't see very well.
These will be talks. Hopefully it'll be a little bit differently. And this isn't the old Natsuo that used to be above Clark's, two floors up in a kind of treacherous place. I think this Natsuo has actually moved down into what's the old Dean's, right? Is it still upstairs?
No. Dean's is still there and
So Natsu is upstairs or Natsu is next door?
It's next door down on the first floor.
Yeah.
That's where it was forever.
Well, it used to be up...
No, that was something else.
That was Natsu.
He owned
that
the whole...
Else.
Yeah, he owned the whole building.
That was after hours.
But yeah,
else.
That was... Third floor was after hours.
I also know about that.
Yeah, we'll let that one go. But that was unofficial Natsu 10 or 15 years ago.
But I used to go to Natsu like when it was a coffee bar. When they had Mr. Coffee and a mini fridge.
Downstairs or upstairs?
Downstairs.
Yeah,
the
floor.
There was no upstairs.
Like, people brought their dogs and the dogs ran wild inside of there. And it was an interesting place.
Wink, wink. There was no upstairs. Got it. All right.
Stop it.
Sorry. It takes me some time. Anyway, so Nerd Night's going on at Natsuo. The only one there ever was downstairs. But if you don't feel like you've got the required nerd chops, you can definitely remedy that this spring by attending some classes at TXRX Labs. We'll look into the class specifics in the upcoming weeks, but for now, we'll just go over the first few titles. We've got Arduino 1, which is an overview of the open hardware microcontroller and its software stack. We've got soldering, Linux CNC, Welding 1, and building your own quadcopter. They're all up in March. And most importantly, we've also got a geek gathering coming up in a week and a half, and that's kind of where I ran out of time writing Barrett Time mid-show. So that's it for this TXRX Token Ring of Fire, and that's that for Barrett Time.
The geek gathering, the original Nerd Night.
Yes, our Nerd Night predates their night.
I bet there were probably at least 35, 40 people there.
Oh, that's huge. You made it sound like there's like three people and a cat.
No.
All spread out to where no one could see the
screen. I'm assuming that they were all there for it. I don't know. I mean, some people may have just wandered in or just be people who hung out there. But there are certain people I definitely am not trying to count in that mix. But the people who were there that seemed to be paying attention to the speakers and the presentation and stuff, I'm thinking there were probably at least 30, 40 people.
So that's not a bad turnout. They were going to do some kind of a celebrity auction, I think, with bachelors and bachelorettes this time. But they couldn't scare up enough. So I think they're going to be doing it in March. So tonight, I mean, not tonight, rather, Friday night, come out, learn all about dating, and then if it doesn't work out for you, you can always rent one, come the next month.
All right, 713-526-5738, if you want to be on the air with us tonight, 713-526-KPFT. We're in the second hour of the show, so we've got plenty of time left.
Talking about the dark.
I was going to say, there's a Silk Road 2. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's the same. Is
it 3D?
It's not the same person.
Mm-mm.
But it's called Silk Road 2.
They're banking on the name, I think, for the most part. And they'll always be. There were
some competitors. I mean, Silk Road wasn't the only game in town anyway.
The hard thing now is that I'm guilty of this too. It's like the number of different sites that I'll go to are like how deep in the web these, you know, what they're calling like deep pockets of knowledge. Most people will go to Reddit, you know, they'll go to a few handful of sites, they'll hit up, you know, the 10 or 15 sites that I always go to, but they don't really scrape a lot deeper than that. So people have been talking about like, you know, and, you know, for instance, like our IRC channel would be one of those. Like you really kind of have to find Technology Bytes IRC to get in there and see what's going on, but there is a lot of stuff going on there. So darknets are really cool, but the more legal things are like the deep pockets and trying to get into, you know, parts of the web like that. But they're all kind of the same. They're recesses of the net where cool things, more not cool things go on that are, you know, just kind of hard to turn up from time to time. Although, to get onto our stuff, you don't need a Tor client. You don't need any kind of anonymous routers or relays or clients. You just need a website.
713-526-5738. This is the original darknet. Broadcasting live from the darkness. Turn off the lights! 713-526-KPFT. So the Olympics are over. That's good. It was interrupting all my stories. Well, I just, you know, nobody wants to put up new content to compete with the Olympics, so all the shows go into reruns until it's over, and then...
Oh, is that what happened? All the streams just dried up for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's hardly any new content. Very little will compete with the Olympics, or the Super Bowl, or football playoffs, or whatever. So whenever that kind of thing happens, if it comes on after the broadcast, it's usually delayed, or if it's supposed to be broadcast at the same time on another channel, they just won't even put anything up. They just give up.
I don't watch that many short stories or that many shows, but the one I've been liking a lot is the Carl Show, that used to, a.k.a. formerly The Walking Dead. It's been like, you know, all Carl all the time, the last 2.5 episodes.
I haven't watched the latest
episode yet. You haven't seen beyond what's on Netflix?
No.
It's more Carl.
When is Sons of Anarchy coming back? That's one of my favorite stories. All right, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, we are entertaining your calls. Such a good night to be in a warm place. I'm in a warm place now, but I know I got to go back out in the cold to get home, so that's not pleasant. All right, so... reviewing the Twitter feeds, and all's quiet out there in internet land. And we had another couple of calls coming in, so that's a good sign. Happy to have the calls coming in, filling up the airwaves with tech talk here on Technology Bites. Don't talk Groovehouse's ear off. I don't want to have to remind you again. He's here to screen your calls, but we do need to let him get the call on the air. We're just going to watch Groovehouse and stare at him. So what happens is people call in and Groovehouse takes down your name and number and puts you in the queue to put you on the air. Let's go ahead and take that call on line one. Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. Two things. I wanted to thank you for helping me, and I'm going to check out with my server about my computer, which may not be malfunctioning. But you guys sound kind of lonely, so I just thought I'd call. But, you know, last week, I think it was, you were talking about WordPress. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the bloggers are gone, all right, and they're all on Facebook now. And where have all the bloggers gone? Gone to Facebook, everyone. But you made some comments about WordPress, and I was wondering what you think. What's good and what's bad about going with WordPress?
There's nothing wrong with going. WordPress is one of the single most popular blogging platforms.
I mean, what's
the
difference between a blogger and WordPress?
A blogger uses WordPress.
No, blogger. Bloggers
gotcha. Owned by Google.
So not the entity or the kind of person, but the actual commercial
service,
product.
The name blogger.
I'm going to be quiet now.
Well, you know, here's what I would suggest.
Because I had to, let me tell you, I had to set up a photo and go, you know, when I went to certain poetry sites and I had to go to Blogger and I had to set up my ID and my identification and a little biography, and then I could get on to Bloggers, and then now WordPress comes. And I mean, is there any difference? Is there any advantage or disadvantage to?
Well, I mean, you know, it really depends on what it is you're trying to do and how you're trying to present yourself to the world in terms of what platform you want to use. The good thing is that they're both free. So what you could do is you could go sign up for accounts on each one and see what you like and what you don't like about each one. But in terms of flexibility and the ability to control and your content and ease of posting, I like WordPress myself, but Google Blogger from Google is probably easier to use, but not as elegant, in my opinion, in terms of how you present your content or how you compose your content. But, you know, is one have advantages over the other? What I like about WordPress is that it can be run on the WordPress servers, or you can bring it onto your own server. You can run WordPress completely self-hosted. Google Blogger is hosted by Google, so your content's on their servers. You don't have as much granular control over it. I like running WordPress because I can secure shell into the server that's running it and manage files that way if I need to. Maybe it's more of a geek
thing. Although a lot of people also do that and then never update it, and it has a bad history of being hackable. Like, and when people don't patch it.
The good thing about WordPress right now is that it's very aggressive about making you upgrade. I mean, at least alerting you that there's an upgrade available, and they've made it easier to do in-place upgrades. So you can actually, you get the notification it's time to upgrade, you click,
that's
click
good
it
because, yeah, there for a while.
No, for a while it was really like kind of sketchy.
1.4 around, yeah. Somewhere around those, that's, man. It was like.
So that's a vote for, a hosted service like Blogger, is at least all the software is kept up to date and all the security is managed by Google. And as long as you have a good, strong password.
Although
on it,
WordPress offers hosted
blogs. No, but I was making the point that because you can host your own WordPress or you can have it hosted.
Right.
But, you know, Google or the Blogger's completely hosted, so it's completely updated by them.
Well, have you guys noticed that all these places are kind of fading away with Facebook these days?
I don't know.
I've been going to websites, you know, Blogger and WordPress for about 5 years, and I notice they're all like disappearing, and everybody's gone to Facebook.
I think there's some amount of truth to that, just because a lot of people don't want to keep updating multiple places. However, I think that in the last year to 2 years. Facebook has started bleeding users. I don't know if they're not growing still, but they're not growing like they were. And I know they've been losing the younger demographic. Like
exactly. I just read in the paper in the business section of the Chronicle that Facebook also is losing members, and they're just all going away. Where are they going?
Well, here's the real deal. The real deal is that more and more people clamor to the internet or find their way onto the internet, and the majority of people who use the internet are not content providers. Okay, they don't produce anything, they don't generate anything, they are just data consumers. So services like Facebook being in place, it's a great central repository because you can get all your information right there. You get links to interesting stories. You get links to funny pictures of cats or whatever you need. But Facebook is not necessarily a good place to offer great deals of content. If you want to have a long, well thought out, easy to read blog article or news article, it's still going to be on a blog. So maybe you're losing certain amount of content in terms of blogs, but you're gaining more quality content, or at least more in-depth content. There's some really lunatic stuff out there.
So what's the next big thing, guys?
The next big thing is going to probably be the call after yours.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call. I don't know what the next big thing is. I wish I knew what the next big thing is. I didn't know that the next big thing was whatever that thing was that Facebook bought for $19 billion.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to be the next big thing, actually, even though it was pretty high.
It's ketchup.
I'm waiting for, like, when all the cool tech gets all retro. So, like, in 15 years, like, the kids want to, like, have Facebook accounts again or, like, MySpace accounts. Like, if you could actually, you know, fake that stuff. Like, you'd pull out the 70s clothes your dad wore if you could pull out, like, hey, check out my credentials for a single sign on Facebook.
See, I think the idea...
GeoCities will come back.
Yeah, I miss GeoCities.
Tripod.
I think the idea of any of these, I mean, MySpace, GeoCities, like, they're all, like, trying to create this online community, right? And Facebook was just, like, the latest iteration to get really huge. And the idea of it's kind of cool. You can have one place where, like, kind of, you know, tons of people can get interconnected. But I think part of what's happened is a lot of people realize maybe it's not so great to be interconnected with all these people that I normally have limited interactions with, because suddenly I'm really pissed off at a lot of these people. Like, they say stuff that I really don't like and don't agree with, and then people get in big fights all the time on Facebook hate each other and unfriend each other when they could have maintained a friendship for years in the
real world. Yeah, I could have gone my whole life without knowing you thought that and been a better person for it.
I just love the little pull down that says, I don't want to see this. You know what? I don't want to see this.
I like... You know, I like being able to unfollow people so they don't show up in my timeline, but I still am a big believer in unfriending with prejudice. You know, and you can't just unfriend somebody on Facebook, because if you unfriend them, they're still following you. You have to block them. And then you have to go back through and clean out your block list so that they know that you're no longer friends with them. That's how you manage
it. It's a lot of work. So I like the idea of when people own their data on their own blogs, but the issue with that, to be able to, you know, it's like you said, it doesn't really aggregate the information, doesn't get it all together. I like the idea where Quora is going, where there's an API and it says, like, okay, this is how we align a photo stream. This is how we align, you know, like what mood you're in, or this is how we align your schedule or where you've been. And then you can share what you want to with the rest of the community or not. But I think it needs to go to the point where people can host their own social networking site. They can host it like on a different server, but it needs to get out of the hands of one single company. Like it needs to get out of, you know, a Facebook or wherever the Facebook replacement is.
I actually have that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've been running a, I don't even know how you pronounce it. Diaspora. Quorum, Diaspora.
Diaspora. Yeah.
I've been running Diaspora. An open server on my server.
It's pretty cool.
An open pod on my server for two or 3 years.
We can't even get people to go to Google Plus. Like getting people over to Diaspora is just going to be, you know. But I think it'll eventually happen.
It's the ease of use. It's just an aggregator. It's what I thought, you know, a good RSS reader was going to be, you know. But for aggregating news content or information content, there are other options, but Facebook is the social component is what makes it. I mean, there's a whole society, there's a whole group of people that focus on, you know, how many times does somebody like a thing I do? I mean, if I do something and then I get these likes, there's that reinforcement, and that's what people are actually going after. And then, and the younger generation is really weird about that, or going out and doing really disastrous things
just for the likes,
to get likes. Because they and I can't even imagine what it would be like to be a young person in the social media age, you know, with you having to have an online presence and how people interact with that and cyberbullying and all
it's that. Too much pressure. We did it for the lulz, but they do it for the likes. That's wrong motivation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, 20, 40, 60 years ago, you know, if you went by 60. And mooned somebody
Yeah, that didn't end up on, you know, all over.
It didn't end
two
up
people
much of
in
anywhere.
The history of TV have been caught on, you know, video doing that, and they're on the net, and then that's everyone
and
else
then,
got away
yeah,
with
yeah, like you know, you one Snapchat gets captured, and it's
and your
forever.
Junk's everywhere.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's no longer in your trunk.
713-526-5738. I see we got two calls in the queue. Groovehouse, who do we have up?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with Sergio.
Sergio, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Oh, hello. Hi. My question is, I recently upgraded to Windows 8.1, and I have a lot of music, and I've noticed that most of my music seems to be doubled, like there's a duplicate of something, and I try to delete the duplicate, and it deletes my original one, so... I'm not sure what – I don't know if that's part of the cloud integration, but it – I don't know.
So it's a brand-new computer for the most part?
Yeah, yeah.
And the music's all local? Like you copy the music locally, or is this music in an account somewhere in the cloud?
No. It's all locally. Some of it is on the cloud, but it's I have what's it called? Zoom Music? I know. Yeah, it's a subscription music website, music service, and I got grandfathered in, so I get like 10 free songs every month or so.
Go ahead.
No, yeah. So yeah, all of that music is locally. Some of it is on cloud, but that's not the one that's
Where is it showing
populated
up
twice?
Where is it showing up twice? Like, what application is it in, or is it on the file system?
It's in a folder in one of my hard drives.
All right, let's make this a lot simpler here, okay? So I have music on my computer. It's in my music folder. I can open it up in Windows Explorer. I can go look at all my songs. There's this album, that album. There's all the songs for each album. Mine's all managed in iTunes. So if I delete a song in iTunes, it's gone. How are you deleting your music?
I'm just going to File Explorer, to be honest, and
so you're okay. That's one way to do it. What is your media player of choice?
I use Zune Media Player.
What's that?
Zune.
Zune. What is the? So you're using a Windows Media Player to manage your library.
I think so.
You don't know?
Sorry.
All right. Tell you what. If you got something going on there, you got time to take this call. It sounds like there's something going on in the background there. I'm not sure what's.
Oh no, I was filling up my gas tank. So.
Oh, okay. Well, so when I manage my music, I manage mine in iTunes. If you're using a Zune, chances are you're managing your music in Windows Media Player.
Yeah.
But if you don't know the answer to that question, I don't think this call is going to go much further. I want to help you, but I'm not really following along with what you're doing. If I was when I manage my music, if I need to, you know, if you're where are you seeing the duplicates? Are you seeing those when you are in File Explorer, or are you seeing those when you're in a media player, or how are you seeing duplicates of your songs?
Both of them, actually, because in Zune Media Player, you can check versus check for duplicate file, and it shows up, and then I try to delete that one.
I wonder if he didn't make, like, when he was copying everything over where I was going, if he didn't accidentally make, like, a copy full of links to that, and it's seeing both, because that's one way two files could show up. You delete one, both of them go away.
Well, if you have a shortcut to a file, and you don't actually delete the shortcut, if the shortcut causes you to delete the actual file when you delete the shortcut, or a sim link or something like that. Tell you what, it sounds to me like you're going to have somebody take a look at your situation, because I don't have a quick and easy answer for you on what's happening here, and I'm not following along completely clearly.
iTunes has like some consolidate library functions and some scanning your system for things, so you could install something like that. And
it wouldn't allow him to sync it necessarily to his Zune, but you could install iTunes, and iTunes, what it'll do is it'll take all of your music files and move them into a single library under
like artist record name.
It actually sets up an iTunes library under your My Documents folder. You have a music folder, you have your iTunes library, and under iTunes library you have a folder for each album. And so all of your music's consolidated into one place. If you've got files here and there, I'm not sure you're actually seeing two files. You may be seeing what's called a link or a shortcut, a sim link to a file. And so if you delete that sim link, it might actually be reaching over to the actual file and deleting that too.
That's easy to create if you're dragging and dropping, you know, like some files or folders over to the new computer. If you accidentally like drag something twice, or you grabbed one of them, did a control C and a control V, sometimes you can create sim links, or, you know, like shortcuts to it without actually copying the music over. So you could have all the music over there, and you could have like a set of shortcuts to it.
Yeah, I guess I'll just try that.
Thanks for your call.
If you can actually see two different files, I believe if you click on one of the files and go to properties, you can see if it's a shortcut or not.
Well, you can look at the file too, and it has on the icon, it has like an arrow or something.
Oh, yeah, a little arrow, bottom right-hand side or something.
All right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse, who do we have up?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Peter.
Peter, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, I got two questions, actually. One is, if the VPN client, you know, that kind of setup for your internet connection, if it's within the company or a certain group of people, does that have like a, you know, I mean, does it have higher security as far as like, you know, threat from spam or phishing or any other, you know, external threat?
No. What a VPN does, it's a virtual private network, and what it does is it encrypts the traffic that goes from your computer into the network that you're connected to. So, like, if you have a series of servers, like mail servers and so forth, at your company that you need to access, they're usually behind a firewall. So, you use that VPN connection to make a secure tunnel to your office. And it encrypts the data that you send back and forth to that network.
So it's encrypted over the internet,
right?
And to your and it on the other end, it appears that your computer is inside the firewall, inside the network.
But because it does split.
But then that this is like, this can never be for general public. It has to be for a specific task group or a company.
Well, you have to determine why it is that you want to use a VPN. A VPN is typically deployed with employees that work in the field to connect to the home
office.
To
give somebody secure access to an internal network.
But it, right. But because your computer's still on the internet and you're still browsing the web, you're acquiring data that's not over the VPN. They do split tunneling.
As long as it does split tunneling, which most modern ones do.
Right. So you're still susceptible to getting a virus if you double click on an email message that has a bad attachment. You're still susceptible to getting a virus if you go to a website that has malicious code on it. So right. A VPN doesn't protect you from that kind of thing.
A more secure
can an outsider third party, like, that doesn't belong to them, abuse the privilege of a VPN connection? Like, they get to know the VPN somehow and they started getting...
You need to be able to authenticate against the VPN, and that requires a username and password. Certainly, it can be exploited.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I mean, if somebody knew a username and password on the VPN system... Then they could run the VPN, put in the username and password, and then their computer would appear as if it were inside that network, and they could get to anything that was inside that network.
Okay. One last question I have is, how do you rate the – I mean, I saw some of the latest version of the Chromebook that Google and – I think it's Google and Samsung, or I don't know.
The Chromebook?
It's very impressive. Well, how do you rate that as a laptop or as a mini, like a, you know, mini – laptop or
what are we talking about again?
Chromebooks.
The Chromebooks.
They're very specific in what they do. I mean, they're a web appliance. They're designed to browse the web pretty much.
You need a fast connection.
Depending on what you do and if you have good internet connections, they can be really nice devices. But
especially for the price.
Especially for the price.
Yeah, but if you see, for the price, I mean, it's amazing how affordable it is, and then. If I'm talking about, say, if you're a desktop publisher and you type a lot, I mean, it's very nimble. And I mean, how do you rate it? Is it good, or you think it's the other products that are better?
I like it, but I think that when you start to get into things like desktop publishing, unless you're doing something like some kind of cloud-hosted application for that, I don't think you're going to be able to do very much of it on the Chromebook. Pretty much you're limited to the Chromebook, anything you could do through a web browser, anything you could just do through Chrome, which is a lot of applications, a lot of office documents, things like that. But you really can't just go out and install straight-up software like Microsoft.
I think there's a lot of people that could have a Chromebook and be perfectly content. I think if you have any kind of specialty stuff you do, you might run into problems. Like if you do video editing, photo editing, any kind of like high-end desktop publishing, if you do CAD work, any of that, it's really not going to serve that purpose at all.
But to augment something...
Do you see the best price for it in Tiger Direct so far? I mean, I found Walmart selling it for $398, so...
We haven't really checked out... I mean, I can't give any advice on how much to pay for something like that. You can shop around and see what it's being offered for.
Okay, but... thank you so much. I love this show. For years I've been listening to you guys.
Appreciate it.
And I've learned a lot. Thanks very much.
All right, Bye. Well, thank you for your call. 713-526-5738. We've got a half hour left in the program. Plenty of time to take some calls.
He's listening. I would just say go to the Google Play Store because they've got official Chromebooks, and I would assume that they would
have
some of the better
prices.
Yeah. You know.
I was going to buy I still haven't done it. I was going to buy a Nexus 5 when they came out through the Play Store.
Yeah, I broke mine.
What?
Yeah,
what?
I'm on my third Nexus 5. I'm not because they're all sold out. I can't get one this week. So I was going to go get a different phone.
What did you do?
I worked like a ton of hours, and it was like a Friday night, and I, you know, was like crossing the street, and I pretty much threw it down Main Street. It was awesome. It landed glass face down, and it still works, but it totally slices up my thumbs because the whole thing shattered. I was like, they've got a red one, but no, it's all gone. Yeah, I mean, I've shaved at least I have no right thumbprint anymore. I could go create some. Go rob some banks, do whatever, just only using my right thumb.
When is that sapphire glass coming?
Not too soon, man.
We need that stuff bad. Barrett needs it bad.
I need transparent aluminum. Star Trek style. I need unbreakable clear optics is what I need.
You need wet wiring. You see,
it needs to be implanted into
you. Of course, you ride a motorcycle, so it's still not safe.
I need a new phone. Yeah, all the other there's nothing out there that all the other phones are really expensive. I mean, it's really hard to get a smartphone for under a big chunk of change. Yes, you can go get a Chromebook for less than you can a smartphone.
Yep.
Can you make calls on that thing?
Yeah, Google Voice.
With Google Voice, you
could.
Can,
yeah. And you can now dial directly from Gmail, which is kind of neat without going to Google Voice. So there are options.
Yeah, you could buy a Chromebook cheaper than you could buy a smartphone.
Probably Hangouts a little bit better too. Yeah.
But you can't get OtterBox for your Chromebook, can you? Although my OtterBox actually broke my phone, so that kind of blows.
What? How did that happen?
It's on the Galaxy S3. It has these little corner pieces that I don't know. When I snapped it into place, it cracked the corner.
I passed the baton to Groove House.
Yeah, you did. Because now I got this really old HTC phone. I can't do anything on it. It doesn't do. It
sounds
bogs
like,
down when it does Twitter.
It sounds like you were trying to pass the baton to Groove House, but you actually ended up passing it down the street.
I threw it right.
Hey, Groove House, catch!
Go along!
Whoops.
I wasn't even there, so Groove House.
Did I hear dogs in the last call, or am I just missing Pete?
I think you're just missing Pete.
Was there a dog barking in the background?
So.
I'm going to go listen to the podcast later. I think there might have been dogs there. Who knows?
713-526-5738 if you want to help us get through the last half hour of our show.
My finger hurts just thinking about Barrett cutting his finger.
Doing swipe
yeah,
with it.
Yeah.
Ow, ow,
wait,
ow.
I still I had to get home, and then I had to, like, a lot of work texts I had to get out. So it's like, oh,
voice,
this hurts.
Voice recognition. Voice recognition works pretty good.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that. I don't know.
But I saw a guy today driving.
He cuts on his lips.
Yeah. I wanted to yell at him to use his voice recognition because he was driving down Main Street by the fountains, not paying attention, you know, scooting over to the next lane, and I just wanted to, like, roll down my window and go, like, use your voice recognition, you idiot.
Yeah, that stuff is just getting out of hand. There's a whole, I didn't know about this, there's a whole red thumbnail campaign thing going on, so people are, and it's not like Penn Jillette of Penn and Teller doing it, but, you know, people are pinning their right, I guess if you're left-handed, you go left, but their thumbnail's red as a reminder for when they pick up their phone just out of habit in the car, you're supposed to see the red, maybe think of, like, you know,
stop,
like blood flows
right
on the highway of death, you know, high school drivers at movie style. And put the phone down because that's distracted driving. And it's actually, I think it's worse than drunk driving. When I look over and I see someone like, wow, are they drunk at 2 in the afternoon? No, they're texting.
They're texting,
you know?
Yeah. I see it so much. I get to ride in a van. I drive a van during the day sometimes, and I can see down into cars. And the amount of people that are texting and driving or on their phone and driving is ridiculous. I see people... Both hands on the wheel, but one hand is
Starbucks.
Starbucks, and the other hand is has the phone on it, and they're using it to hold the wheel with the phone in their hand. And it's just like, really?
I don't get why people need to stay on the phone all the time. It just don't under. I see these people, they're constantly just yammering away on the phone.
I don't have a problem.
They're at the grocery store. They're shopping.
They use it to kill time. A lot of people, they use it just to kill time. Like, oh, I'm in the store and I'm not actively talking to somebody, so I'm just going to call up somebody and chat with one of my friends.
I know, but who's sitting on the other end of that line who's got nothing else to do than talk to their friend who's out shopping?
Someone in another store. They're in another store.
Somebody driving.
Yeah, somebody driving.
Because if they were home, they'd probably be watching TV.
I watched two young people walking side by side, and they're both on their phones. And they're probably not talking to each other, which... is bad enough, or if they are talking to each other, that's even worse.
I was going to say that's actually happened to a friend of mine, at least one, maybe multiple friends of mine, where they were in a vehicle and they were like, why are you texting? Like, your friend's in the vehicle with you. It's kind of rude. And they're like, we're texting each other.
Well, it's just this all-consuming little media thing that people walk around with in front of their face. I mean,
and when did it become okay to let everybody hear the video you're listening to?
That's still
nobody
not cool.
Wants
no games.
To hear
your stuff
kid
in public.
Crying
that's got
in a video you recorded during the day.
Why is it Bluetooth a bigger thing? Why aren't people more? I mean, it's like in the UK, all of our UK employees, we have to provide hands-free gear. If they're using their phone for corporate purposes, so why isn't that more of a thing? Why don't people just have the Bluetooth on their ear, you know, and have their hands free? Why is that a challenge? I mean, I guess it's almost like there has to be a status symbol that says, first of all, I'm important enough I've got friends I can talk to on the phone, and then here's my phone. I have one, and it's, you know, you can tell by it, it's a certain make or manual. It's like an accessory. I don't get it. I mean, I know I am old, and I'm, you know, I'm too old, but it's just, it's ridiculous.
I'll be glad when everyone has and Google Glass, just, we can get rid of all this phone nonsense.
It's not just kids either. I mean, it's adults that are, you know, the glow of the phone. If you're driving around at night, you can see the glow of the phone illuminating the cabin of the car. You know, you can see their face.
Not to be ageist, but I think that's almost more dangerous because I do notice that it's not just the young offenders like they've been doing it their entire times, but it's a little bit more disconcerting when people are having a hard time finding certain keys on their phone and still trying to drive. It's not like a second habit.
Let's take line one. Let's take line one. Jeff wants to talk about texting while driving.
All right. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
All right. Well, I feel kind of guilty about it, and I don't like it when people do it. But I find myself doing it sometimes, and just out of boredom. I mean, you know, sometimes I leave from, you know, I've got to drive to Angleton or somewhere, you know, basically 70 miles. You're bored. You listen to the radio for a while, and, you know, and I look up things, you know.
You look up. Wow.
Yeah, but I glance down, glance back up, and I get mad when I see other people pass me with their phone in their hand, but... You know, with me, it's different.
Well, the upside is if you're right? doing research while driving, you're not going to see them. So you're fine.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, and I've heard that they have the technology, and I don't know that they should control it this way, but to make it to where the data connection is not there when you're moving faster than X amount miles per hour, you know, I don't know. But if you drive down I-45 or whatever highway, if you look around, everybody has a phone in one hand, and they're glancing down at it. I mean, you know, it's dangerous, no doubt, and I'm guilty too. But
people also use a phone for GPS. So even if you don't have a phone, they might be looking at their GPS, like on the dash or in the dash.
Yeah, but a GPS, you're not reading it. Even you know, if I'm doing with work and I'm doing talk to text. I have to talk into it, but you have to, like, proofread it because sometimes it comes out crazy and, you know, so you're like, well, and then you're trying to backspace and this and that. And, you know, if you take your eyes off the road and you're going 65, if you look down for 1 or 2 seconds, I mean, you've done traveled something. So, I mean, you know, it is dangerous. I think they need to do something about it. I hate them, you know, trying to control things, but, I mean, where do you go with it? I mean, it's not going to change.
So you think it's bad?
Stop doing it.
You know it's dangerous. You don't like other people doing it. So, but that's the big question. Why do you see yourself as the exception?
Think,
why is it not
most,
as dangerous when you do it? How can you break yourself
people,
from doing
that's,
it?
I think that's
no,
super
I agree.
Common.
I'm
that's
bad. I can't justify it. It's just, you know.
And I think there's a whole lot of people that view it that way. They don't really like people doing it, but they're just going to do it real fast. But then you have other people who they don't care. They're just flaunting it.
Yeah, I'm different than them. Like, I'm only going to glance at it. Well, that's not true, and takes a glance.
Yeah, and some people, they don't care. Like, hey, I'm in a free country. I can do whatever I want. I'm going to sit here and, like, talk and stare at my phone and read the New York Times on it while I'm, you know, on my one-hour commute.
Yeah, if I'm driving, I will not text. But a lot of times if I'm texting, I'll get bored and go for a drive.
No, wait, exactly. I was going to say, people that say, no, I'll never do it, and like I said, I don't like it, and I complain about it when people do, that if somebody, you know, I mean, if you're just going to tell the truth, yeah, I do it too.
Yeah, I try not to do it, but every once in a while I do. Like, I'm driving somewhere, and I get one, and I'm like, I really need to reply to it, but I really need to get where I'm going, so.
I don't do it anymore, but the flip side of that.
Control it with an app, I mean, if they could control it with speed or something, would you be opposed to
well
it?
It's going to have to be a you controlling it thing, because the issue you get into is if, let's say, we've got like some kind of imposed software that locks out the data connection moving over 50 miles an hour. How does it tell if you're driving the vehicle or if you're a passenger in the back seat?
I think it would have to be a blanket rule, and it wouldn't matter.
No, that's not gonna weird. I don't think that's gonna fly.
Is everybody on buses and on
public transportation,
trains,
Google smart cars?
I guess I don't think about that being here in the South. We don't have, you know, a ton of that, but yeah, I can see where that would be an issue. Yeah, well, I don't know. I felt guilty, and wanted to call in and kind of express
some. Try and stop doing it, because then you get to be on that other side, and every time you see someone texting, you get to be all, you know, I don't do that.
Indignant
and give them the look, and they never look at you because they're texting, you know. But
you're driving,
try.
You see them texting, you get so mad you want to throw your beer at them, that kind of thing. good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks for your call.
I think if you're at the light and you're first in line and you're texting,
that's irresponsible.
That's irresponsible, yeah. Because you're holding everybody up because you're not going when the light turns green.
There are a lot of the states that have come in and said, hey, there's a ban on it. They've actually said, even while the car is stopped, as long as the motor's going and you're in the car, you can't do it because you're not paying attention to, like, traffic could be coming, kind of emergency vehicle coming up on you. There are a lot of things going on. So you don't text all flicked when you're on motorcycles, do you? That's pretty hard to do.
It's really difficult to do.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I've never done it. But, it's very difficult to do, and I generally try not to. Read more often than ever try to write anything. But even then, I know, like, I could, it could be bad. I could drop my phone also and lose my phone.
See, I don't read on the motorcycle because the wind blows around the pages, and I keep losing where I am, and it's now. It's too hard. You've got another texting while driving call, looks like.
All right, 713-526-5738. Groovehouse, who do we have?
All right, it's our good friend Gary.
we meet again.
Deja vu. I think there's a glitch in the Matrix.
No, they've got a brand new technology now.
Speed dial.
At a stoplight and the light turns green, they've built in a horn that goes beep, so you know the light's turned green. So while you're texting while driving, and the light turns green and everybody's waiting behind you, you know when it's time to go. And that was actually in a cartoon in the Chronicle. Now, is that a brilliant idea or what?
Brilliant.
I mean, think about it. You know, the light. How many times have you been stuck behind some idiot texting when the light turns green?
Yeah, but the cars already have horns. The problem is that that's a great solution until the horns turn into guns.
That'd be a better solution. I do want to say there is a solution to texting while driving, and that's called intelligence. When you drive, you drive. You know, I mean, come on. These people say, well, I'm busy, and I'm texting, and I'm talking on my cell phone. But, hey, when you drive, you drive. I mean, you got to be an idiot. How many people have died because of distractions by texting and cell phones? I mean, it's a question of personal responsibility. That's all there is to it.
It is.
As he gets out of his car, this is a setup.
All right, bye. All right, so we got another call.
The door is ajar.
Yes, we do. We're going to take Justin on line one.
Justin, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to make a comment. I drive motorcycle. And, you know, road conditions are a big deal, and you really have to be wary of drivers. But the worst, from what I can tell, is when, and I'm not trying to be one of those who says ages and things like this, but when young people are driving and they're texting at the same time, that's when it gets the most dangerous, driving a motorcycle.
Because, yeah, you're mixing inexperience with inattention, and it gets ugly. Really quickly, yeah.
But, you know, if I'm not driving my motorcycle, then, you know, in my car I have the nav radio that has the speaker. And, you know, I'm sure technology is going to get to a point to where they have texting on the windshield and things of this nature. You know, I don't see it being a problem for the rest of days.
Yeah, I think eventually we're going to get our, you know, autonomous self-driving cars, and everyone can do whatever they want to, that's kind of how it's going to have to go, I'm assuming. And then it's going to get to be the point where, you know, like motorcycles and cars, that's more of a fun pastime thing you do on the weekends and not something you necessarily rely on.
Right.
Yeah, self-driving cars would solve it all. That would be the thing. But they, you know, they've done demonstrations where people trying to text or talk on the phone drive as if they were impaired with a certain blood alcohol level.
Yeah, it's as bad as being drunk.
Yeah.
If not worse.
All right. Thank you, Phyllis.
All right. Thanks for your call. Be safe. All right. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Wow. He's opened up a can of worms here. All right. Who's up next on the Texting While Driving show?
That would be David.
Pull over and have a conversation with us, or just keep driving. What's up, David?
Hey.
Hey.
You guys, I think there's a more important subject is eating cereal while driving.
God, you say that.
I saw a girl driving down the road eating her cereal.
Yep.
So she had a full-on bowl, spoon.
Somebody saw a guy shaving.
Like with shaving cream or an electric razor?
Surely electric.
They said it was electric. I was imagining somebody actually like was shaving cream shaving.
Now I want to put shaving cream on my face and get a fake razor.
But I've seen women putting on makeup, which is obviously distracted. Eating their breakfast.
Last year, and a girl comes on the freeway, and I'm in the middle lane, and I don't notice her till like she's almost in my lane, and I swerve. I lose control, and I wreck into the barrier, and I collected a car. And I'm sitting on the side of the shoulder, and I see her pull on the other side of the shoulder of the freeway and sitting there waiting. Maybe she's finishing her text or whatever, but I call the police officer, comes up there and asks me what happened and explain the accident. And he didn't really want to hear that part of the accident. He just wanted to get his record report and it's the first record that showed up, she drove off. And I tried to say, I was explaining it when I called 911 and all this other stuff. But
I think things are going to change.
You got to be careful out there.
They're going to start to subpoena, I think, like phone records and text records. Well, I know in states that are prohibiting that. And if you're in an accident, it shows that, hey, we see that you placed a text 10 seconds before your accident, you're going to be held
insurance companies are going to be the ones that are going to deny claims because they'll be able to, they will subpoena your phone records. See that you were talking on the phone or texting during the time of the accident and deny your claims.
Well, that would be the best and involving that law for sure.
That would definitely put the fear of doing that into some people.
Well, the thing is that people are not aware of how readily available that information is. People are talking about their privacy and security online. You know, it can be determined that you were online and where you were by subpoenaing your phone records. They can see which cell tower you're coming off of. They can see...
Oh, you can tell your true speed that you were traveling. By triangulating and taking different, like, okay, at such and such, he was at this coordinate. 30 seconds later, he was here. He was doing 80 miles an hour.
KD5 said, I was driving through Houston, and I found this program about texting and driving.
Through Houston.
Texting while driving.
So I texted my friends about it.
All right, David, we appreciate your call, and sorry about that accident.
Hey, great subject, guys.
Hey, thank you. Bye. All right. Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Bruce.
Bruce, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
They say way back decades ago when Porsche first started importing cars to the U.S., their product engineers were mystified for this American demand for cup holders in their car. Because in... the German attitude is when you drive, you single task. You drive. You don't do anything else.
I've actually heard that. I don't remember if I heard it was Porsche or not, but I've heard that about it was a German car manufacturer that didn't have cup holders and didn't understand why Americans would want to have cup holders, drinks in their vehicle.
Cereal bowls.
While they're driving.
Interesting.
Oh, and you mentioned that about the timing. Up in the Northeast, they have toll roads where you get on the toll road. If you exit the toll road too quickly, you're automatically issued a ticket.
Yeah, they do that in Europe, too. I found out the hard way in Italy. They do it all over there. But it's nice because what it allows you to do is you can actually, for short bursts, you can actually speed up, get around traffic, and you're not penalized because they take the average time it took, not the average, but the overall time it took you to get from point A to point B, and then take the average speed and apply that. So that's actually kind of a better way to do it.
Well, I remember driving in California and seeing signs that said speed checked by aircraft. And so what they would do is they would fly around or allegedly fly around, and they would see when you hit one mark, and then they would time how long it took you to get to the next mark.
Oh.
And figure out your speed.
I always thought they meant like, I always imagined like a plane with the radar gun shooting down. Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
They use markers, so they fly over, and as you're driving along, they see you pass the one marker, and then they measure out how long it takes you to get to the next marker.
And that's not just in California. Like, I've seen those signs in other places.
I've seen them in Texas.
And they do. They have markers they use, and they time how long it takes you to get from one to the other to get your speed.
So the moral here is if you drive really fast, take lots of rest stops. Break.
I remember years ago I was flying down West Park one night about probably 80, 90 miles an hour.
Texting while eating cereal.
this, this helicopter hit me with its white light. You know, sorry. I slowed down, but, you know.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. And okay. Watch out for the
white. Watch out for the black helicopters.
Because they don't use their lights like that.
No. They sneak up on you really fast.
Well, I wonder if the dump will catch. I guess it has to catch that. All right.
Got a few more minutes left.
I hope so.
A couple more.
All right, Groovehouse, who's up next?
All right. Up next, we are going to speak with David.
David, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
A question to ask yourselves is, would you want your child to be doing this while he's driving his car? You know, if you're...
I don't have children. I don't want it, your children to do it.
Talking on the phone. You know, think about it that way. Would you want one of your kids doing what you're doing while they're driving? And you probably say to yourself, no, I wouldn't want them doing this. So think about it.
Well, I think with parents, it's going to be a double standard anyway. If the parents are doing it, they've already set the bad example for their kids. God knows what other bad habits they've picked up. I think that's a challenge for parents today. And the whole cell phone question with parents, like how old is a kid get to be when he gets a cell phone? What are the rules about how he uses or he or she uses it? Parents are completely, well, in my experience, they seem to struggle with how they're going to manage technology in their children's lives, because the children understand the technology much more than the parents.
The idea is that you're supposed to give them some freedom little by little, and unfortunately giving
them... Well, there's no parenting example. You can't say, well, what did my mom do in the 50s when I, you know, with my first cell phone? There's none of that. There were protocols on who can cross the street first and how old you need to be to go to the certain kind of a movie or maybe a first date, but nothing on...
The funny thing is that in general, freedoms have for kids have decreased a lot. Like, as far as, like, what children could do, you know, like... 100 years ago, a child could go 15 miles, walk 15 miles away from home and back during a day.
While playing with fire and knives.
Yeah, you know, 50 years ago, it was like 5 miles. 20 years ago, it was 2 miles. 10 years ago, it was 1 mile. Now they can go 40 feet from their house.
But not without a cell phone.
Yeah, but I understand your point. Yeah, you want to set a good example for your kids, I think.
Well, I mean, just think about those things. I mean, I think the reality is, if you really want to be safe, turn your phone off while you're driving.
I agree.
The next one is, why do cops get to drive around with their computers on right in front of their faces?
Why do cops get to do whatever they do?
Because they enforce the laws.
They're the police. Yeah. They're above the law.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for your call. Bye. All right.
We've got to take this last call.
Last one, right. Vincent.
Vincent, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. We talked about driving while eating cereal. How about this? Back in my day, driving while eating cereal, but driving a standard transmission.
Do you cereal bowl in your lap, or how are you navigating the cereal and steering and shifting?
I made it work back then. Thankfully, my son has an automatic.
All right, thanks for your call.
Yeah, bye. I can see once you get up to speed.
I've got an old photo of my dad using a telegraph in the car. Busted,
I have
pops.
My grandfather releasing a pigeon, a carrier pigeon.
Keep the wire taut, son.
All right, well, that was a good last bit to the show, so we'll just have the whole texting while driving show next week. That would be awesome.
And that will be the one from our
flew
hearts.
By.
Yeah, I was texting while driving through Houston. There's a show on about texting and driving. It was awesome.
All right, well, we're glad you could tune in. Thanks for being a part of Technology Bites tonight. We'll be back next week for more of this. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Texting while driving. Not texting while driving.
Bread Machine.
Groovehouse.
Saturday, March 1st, the San Jose Clinic hosts Art with Heart, their annual fundraising gala. Featuring an art and jewelry auction with a Mardi Gras flair, this year's auction will offer museum-quality artwork, unique and beautiful pieces from talented local artists and renowned jewelers, as well as one-of-a-kind adventures and more. For more information, you can visit sanjoseclinic.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
We had no quarrel with anyone. We only want to stop riding the buses until we are treated as any other passenger.
Tune in on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. for the best of our past, present, and future from the vault. From the Vault is a weekly hour from the Pacifica Radio Archives, a national treasure of interviews, performances, and important moments. In this weekly documentary series, From the Vault presents archival audio to bring history to life.
It sounds like Harvey Milk is trying to send a message out to other gay or non-gay people who want to run for public office.
Get involved. Build your base. Build your support. You can't just get out there and say, hey, I'm a nice guy and I'm going to vote right on all the issues.
From the Vault airs Wednesday at 6 p.m. You can hear